We're going to do a session on community organizing, and I guess the sort of primary reason you do community organizing is to get people together. So that's the first thing we're going to ask you guys to do is move up. It's sort of part and parcel of working together is actually, you know, sitting close enough so that you can actually speak to one another. That's what we're trying to do is mobilize people in our communities to talk to one another. So I don't think it would do that we all sort of sat in these isolationist little tables at conferences. So if we could begin by example, model the behavior. All of you parents will know what I'm talking about. That's good. The last thing you do is thank your community for responding in the way you wanted them to. So thanks for sitting together.
Welcome, everybody. Just in case people don't know who I am, I might tell you some different stories this time. I mean, my name is Penny Goldsmith, and I'm the coordinator of PovNet, and you've just met Diane Brennan, who is PovNet's community organizer, working primarily out of British Columbia. We wanted to talk about community organizing around poverty because I think that it's something that you've all got a lot of experience with, and we have some experience as well, and we want to share some of those stories, and also how we can use what we're talking about strategically to do something about some of the things we've been talking about over the last couple of days. So that's what sort of our agenda is. In your packages, under the first PovNet yellow sheet, PovNet now, the yellow now is a color, it's called PovNet yellow, you'll see a handout that we put together called Community Organizing About Poverty. And this is sort of just a general outline of what we're going to be talking about, but this is sort of a loose and comfortable discussion at the end of the day. The first thing that we wanted to find out from you is what kind of experiences of community organizing that you have. So maybe just a show of hands as to whether you've been involved in doing any kind of community organizing event in your community. Good. We've got a lot of experts here. This is what we want. This is exactly what we want, because the point of this exercise is to share ideas. And I mean, community organizing, as you know, can be anything from, you know, a meeting at a kitchen table to a large forum, a demonstration, sitting in an MLA's office, all sorts of things. But we're going to just tell a couple of stories of experiences that we've had over the last few years, and then open it up to you to do the same. Again, we are being taped, so if you can use the mic. What happened to the mic? It disappeared completely. Oh, that's a drag. No, we got to tape it again. Not take it. Tape, not take. All right, we'll just have to hand this one around. Or people just have to sort of come up and we can just get, you see, this way people can get closer and closer. And part of the discussion as well, specifically that we want to talk about at some point during the next hour or so, is some of the ideas that have come up that Cammie has been talking about around regional training, the same kind of stuff that we're doing here in your own locations, and how we can use some of these community organizing ideas to facilitate that too. So that's a sort of a loose agenda. And I'm going to turn it over to Diane to tell us some stories first.
Oh. Well, I thought maybe that I would start with some sort of colossal failures, because I think that's really the best way to learn, is to do something and dissect it and figure out where you could have done it better. And then the next time try to do that. And then I guess I will end with one of our major wins, I guess. When I first started working at the Law Center in Nanaimo, we tried to organize sessions on Know Your Rights with regard to welfare. So it would be in the early 80s. And, we had a volunteer who worked at our office, and so we gave her a list of agencies to phone and ask them to come, and we even put an ad in the paper and put posters up here and there. And we were quite excited because we had our stuff together, we had our materials, we had what we thought was a really sort of crackerjack afternoon set up in the local community center. And two or three times we showed up and there was like one person, maybe two, and that was all. And it was puzzling to us because we actually did have a lot of client work. And so we sort of puzzled over why, if we did the kind of advertising that we did and the phone calls to agencies that we did, that we didn't get as many people as we thought would be interested. And we learned from that. And it's not adequate to make a phone call to an agency or fax a notice to an agency or even an individual who you think might be interested. When it comes to pulling people together into a group, it's sort of been my experience that you have to send out your call, send out your invitation. Maybe one thing that worked well for us would be to partner with an agency that worked in an area. So Citizens Advocacy in Nanaimo did a lot of advocacy with income assistance clients, mental health clients. And so they had a client base that they dealt with on a consistent basis. So they had the database of people we were able to teach. And so we separated the jobs out. And the job of finding the people, announcing the meeting, doing that kind of legwork would be assigned to another agency. And our agency's task was to put together a really good module for speaking or teaching and setting up a really good learning environment. And that worked really well for us. The agency that would be doing the culling out of people would phone people, fax people, maybe a week before the event, phone people, fax people, reminders, this is happening, maybe a mail out, maybe a fax out again. It's just, in my view, not adequate to just announce a meeting. You've got to follow it up, make sure that people remember. Everybody's busy, and so you're going to have to follow up with their calendars and make sure that they're going to be there. We learned that for full-day meetings, it is essential that there be some meal. And one thing that worked really well for us with the lunchtime meal was to partner up with community kitchens. And they had, or the Canadian Mental Health Association in Nanaimo has a catering business. So working with other agencies that way on databases, luncheons, that kind of stuff, just begins to really broaden your base of invitations that can go out and follow-ups. We learned to have a really clean agenda, make sure that we started on time, stuck to our agenda as much as we could. Lots of space on your agenda for discussion, because if you're doing community organizing, you're not really just trying to impart information. You're actually trying to hook something in each person there to be ready at the end of your meeting to take some sort of action. And probably the most successful day we had, we partnered with Malaspina University College in their community education department. Our office, the community law office, and we had a student, a criminology student, so we had somebody who could work almost full-time on organizing this, doing the invitations, ensuring people came out. And it was around housing. There was absolutely no housing in Nanaimo at the time. It was 1989. And we pulled together, we made a decision. First of all, we made a decision that this was a meeting for service providers. And I don't even recall why we made that decision, but that was the decision that we made. We had a full day that included brainstorming, and at the end of the session, we spent about an hour and a half determining action, community action that the group decided had to be done in order to deal with the housing crisis. And there was a report back then to everybody who had come. There was a written report delivered to them. And out of that, one of the recommendations was to form a community housing association. And that was spawned. And to date, there are at least three new housing projects, family projects and specific to singles, that were developed via that organization. So it worked really well, but it took enormous amounts of planning and planning around very clear specifics. We made a lot of decisions, and those decisions I think you'll find in this mobilizing your community, the decision points around mobilizing. And in my view, the very most important thing is to make sure that the last thing on your agenda is your action plan and some way of following up. Otherwise, it's just one more meeting where everybody comes together and talks about a problem and goes home and hopes that somebody that was there picks up the ball and runs with it, and that's not likely to happen unless it's assigned.
Thank you, Diane. I'm going to talk a little bit about Pavnat. I do talk about other things sometimes, but there's been many different kinds of community organizing work that have gone into making Pavnat work around British Columbia. But what I want to talk about right now is some of the experiences I've had working with Pavnat in other parts of the country. We've had some money from the federal government over the last couple of years to move Pavnat national across the country, and it's been a very interesting experience in community organizing work for me to see how this has worked. Because Pavnat in British Columbia, the way that it started was very much from all of you. It came out of anti-poverty advocates around the province who needed to be able to communicate with each other in a way that was cheap. And so the work that we did, we were working with each other, we'd been working with each other for years, we just kept on doing it using a different tool. You know, we knew each other, we knew where we lived, we knew how it worked. When I sort of branched out into the rest of the country, it was a bit of a different kettle of fish. And the first thing that I had to do in terms of identifying audiences was to sit down and think about Pavnat in BC and how Pavnat in BC could or, you know, would work in other parts of the country. And I realized that the very first thing that I had to do about identifying an audience was to make sure that who was identifying the audience was in an anti-poverty advocate in that province or territory. I mean, this seems obvious, but actually it's not something that happens all the time, you know. I mean, we've all been experienced someone coming in from somewhere else and telling us what we should do. And this was something that, of course, you know, would not have worked as far as getting Pavnat going anywhere else. And so I spent a fair bit of time making contacts and phoning people and finding people to organize meetings and different parts of the country. And last year I spent 6 months in Toronto organizing a big national meeting. But what I want to talk about is some of the experiences I had when I traveled through the Maritimes 2 summers ago, basically bringing Pavnat to the masses. the masses of the Maritimes. It was really interesting, the different kinds of meetings, because what I did was I was in touch with anti-poverty advocates and said, you know, I'm going to be in your location. I'd like to talk about Pavnat, how it can be useful to you, and will you set up a meeting to talk about it, and, you know, made sure that Pavnat was providing money for you know, coffee and muffins and that kind of thing. In different parts of the Maritimes, there were very different kinds of meetings. In Prince Edward Island, we met in a community. The community space in Charlottetown was on top of the local superstore, where there was a sort of this huge big grocery store, this kind of community room, you know, at the top of it. And so we all kind of 9 o'clock in the morning walked upstairs, and you kind of saw this huge big store down below. And they were quite used to it. That's where you met. I mean, you met was sort of surrounded by. Big boxes. And when I was in, when I was in St. John's, Newfoundland, we met in the local women's center. But what's come out of that, as far as the contacts that we have for PovNet, is very much people who are connected with the people who organize the meetings in their local communities. I mean, I'm still an outsider, and I'm someone who provides the resource, but I'm not. But it's the people who are doing that work in their local communities who can figure out how to make it work and how to use it. And I think that's a very important part of doing any kind of community organizing work is defining the relevant people and having the organizers of the meeting defining that those relevant people as well. Identifying the issue is, and I'm just again going through these sort of the numbers that we've got here, is something that seems like it should be obvious, but isn't necessarily, because sometimes meetings, especially meetings that are held in sort of frustration and anger, become this huge, big mobilizing cry. But again, you end up leaving the meeting without a specific action, without a specific thing to do. I'd like to sort of hear some of the stories, I think, from you about the kind of organizing that that you've been doing in your communities and how they've worked and how they haven't worked. I think Diana's right. I think that evaluation is a very big part of community organizing work, and it's something that it's not like, you know, how we did it wrong. It's how do we do it, you know, how we can work it better another time. So do people... Okay. Well, no, it's okay. We're going to share the mic. stories from people. Community organizing stories from people. Go ahead, yeah, Diane. Come on up here. The roving mic.
I live in Surrey, and many of you may know that it's a municipality that is really sprawled, composed of about 5 or 6 different neighborhood centers. So organizing event around poverty and issues affecting low-income people is always a challenge. But I think we've found something that does work. Since Naramata in October, we have organized 2 information forums on the disability reassessment. They've been neighborhood-based. We've done one in Newton, and we have one coming up on Wednesday in North Surrey. And something that I learned at the first one, it was probably, I've been fortunate to work with a group of people that are really committed to social justice. We are based at a United Church, but the people on our committee actually come from a number of denominations and faiths. But we work very well as a team. And at our last session, although we were disappointed that we just had 27 people out for the forum, the feedback that came back from people was just phenomenal. And what I learned is not to be a bean counter, but to think about quality. And the feedback that we got was people felt really cared for the 2 hours that they were there. There was a lot of information. We had wonderful speakers. Robin's co-worker, Tom McGregor, was the main speaker of the evening. John Simpson was there talking about the changes to legal services, and he handled it very diplomatically. He was in a room of people that were feeling quite ambivalent about how legal aid has changed, so he had some really good information to share. And our local advocacy group, Newton Advocacy, had a strong presence there too. And I guess what I'd suggest is to really think about who's doing what in your community and try to involve as many agencies as you can and really work in a collaborative way. This event, although it was organized by People's Empowerment Network, involved the BC Coalition of People with Disabilities, Newton Advocacy, the Mental Patients Association, Legal Services, PIAC, and the United Church. So we were quite proud. Thank you.
Other stories? You can use that one now, I think. Just don't trip on the wire.
I won't.